Well, that's been great so far, isn't it? I know we've packed the choir, they did a great job, but also the band have been doing a great job, so I think we need to give them a big round of applause. Well, now we're going to think a bit about that passage that's literally just been read to us. Hugh, if you could move on to the PowerPoint.
See if it's working.
Now, if the technology works and I press this button, something amazing should happen. Exactly, unless you've been living under a rock. You might have noticed that a new film has just come out, a new Star Wars film. Now, spoiler alert, I want to make it really, I know that some of you are getting nervous, there are not going to give away anything to do with the new film, okay? I haven't seen it yet, so I can't. So, no spoilers if you haven't seen the new Star Wars film. However, I am going to give some spoilers about the older films. So if you've never seen any of the Star Wars films, I warn you now, I'm going to spoil the plot, okay? However, the first Star Wars film came out in 1977, that's about 40 years ago, so if you haven't seen it yet, I kind of assume you're not likely to see it, okay? But you might have noticed, if you've watched some of the Star Wars films, oops, no, don't do it again, there we go, you might have noticed, actually, there are a lot of similarities between Star Wars and the Christian message. One of the reasons why I love the Star Wars films, and one of the reasons I love them is because George Lucas, in writing the storyline, has borrowed, he's taken so many of the ideas from the Christian message. So, if you don't know, Anakin Skywalker, he is born of a virgin, and his birth is prophesied. Now, it's a little bit different. He's not conceived by the Holy Spirit. There's these funny things called midichlorians. But clearly, you don't have to be Einstein to work out where George Lucas got this idea of a saviour. His birth is prophesied and he's born of a virgin. Also in the Star Wars film, it's all about battling an evil empire. And of course, when Jesus was born in the Roman Empire, the Romans were seen as a baddie. And this whole sort of the kingdom of light against the kingdom of darkness, that's all the Christian message, isn't it? And of course, the biggest theme that occurs again and again throughout the Star Wars story is the theme of redemption through sacrifice. So if you've seen the first film, chronologically, 1977, Obi-Wan Kenobi, when he's fighting Darth Vader, he says, "Strike me down and you will make me more powerful." Almost like a picture of resurrection, that through sacrifice, he's fighting to save his friends. There is some kind of resurrection power. And of course, the episode 6 finishes with the ultimate sacrifice. So Anakin Skywalker, the one who was born of a virgin, who's prophesied, he gives his life to kill the Emperor and to save the whole universe. And it's a great picture of sacrifice to save the world. Now, all of that comes from the Christian message. You probably know that's one of the reasons why I love Star Wars. However, George Lucas has obviously just taken it from the Christian message, hasn't he? And I found out just this week that Disney have made the new film, and to be able to make the new film, they had to buy all the rights off George Lucas. And they paid George Lucas $4 billion for that. That's not $4 million, that's $4 billion he was paid for that. And it's basically the Christian message. So I had this idea, I thought what I could do is sue George Lucas for let's say, $2 billion. I'm not greedy. And I could say, it's copyrighted the Christian church. But there was a bit, I realised that I had this great plan, and it all went wrong, because of course, the Christian church has never copyrighted the gospel. So I can't do that. And I'm not bitter, but he's written, I say the Christian story every week, and I've not even got a million. He makes 6 films and gets $4 billion. I'm not bitter at all. But I hope you can see. So that's one of the reasons why I love Star Wars. Because basically, so many of the themes are taken from the Christian message. But I want to draw attention a bit more to that story that's just Arthur's just read for us in Matthew 1. Because there are some differences. So there's many similarities why I love Star Wars. But I want to draw your attention to the story, the part of Matthew's Gospel that Barbara's just read. There are 3 key differences. And if you don't like Star Wars, this is not just about Star Wars. Star Wars represents many of the ideas today. So I just want to say three ways that actually Matthew records his gospel is different. And the first is there in verse 21, and if you notice that, verse 21 of Matthew 1, it says, "She," that's Mary, "will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." And in the Christian gospel, unlike Star Wars is all about the impersonal force, so morally neutral. In the Christian message, there's a really strong sense of personal sin, that we are accountable to God for the way we live our lives. Now, even as I say that, you're probably thinking, oh, there we go. What is it with Christians and sin? They talk about it all, they bang on about sin all the time. What's this big deal? Wouldn't the world be so much a better place if we just told everyone how good they were? You can do anything, you're great. If we gave that positive message, wouldn't that make the world a better place? By banging on about sin, doesn't that give us a low self-esteem? Doesn't that cause problems? Well, I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I ask you to make your own decision. But I would suggest that actually it's the other way around. That the world would be a much better place if we believed in Jesus and accepted personal responsibility for our sin. See, I used to be a secondary school teacher. And again, don't take my word for it. You just think this. I would say that over the last 40, 50 years or so in the Western world, our educational philosophy has been based not on personal sin, but on telling everybody that they are wonderful, that you can do anything, you can achieve your dreams, you're great, you're good, we can tell them. And where has that led us? A friend of mine just recently pointed my attention to an article in Psychology Today. This is from September the 22nd this year. This is from America, and a lot of universities have commented on how their students have a lack of resilience. Lots of silly examples given. Here was one. Two students had sought counselling, professional counselling, because they'd seen a mouse in their apartment. They called the police, who kindly dialed, 911 in America, who came and said a mouse trap for them. But anyway, that's just a trivial example. What these universities, they got together and said, there's a problem here. Rather than being really confident, having been told how good they are, actually they're not very resilient. These are some of the things in their report. There's been an increase in diagnosable mental health problems, a decrease in the ability of many young people to manage the everyday bumps in the road of life. Students are afraid to fail. They do not take risks. For many of them, failure is seen as catastrophic and unacceptable. So failure, the report said, and struggle need to be normalised. And as I read that, I think, what they really need to hear about is Jesus. Because I'm a Christian, and the first step to being a Christian is admitting that I am a failure. Actually, that I'm a failure, that morally I'm bankrupt before God, I keep making mistakes. But the wonderful news about the Christian message is there is a way to deal with that. I don't have time to explain in detail, but it's to do with Jesus' death on the cross. That actually, he took the punishment I deserve, when he rose again, he made it possible for me to be put right with God. And actually, that means that my past can be dealt with. And I'm able to cope with the fact that as a human being, I am a failure. But actually, that's dealt with. And that doesn't have to crush me, but I can actually make progress in life. So don't take my word for it, but I suggest to you that actually this Christian idea of a personal sin actually makes us better people and more able to cope with life. Anyway, that's the first difference, personal sin. What about verse 22? Matthew then writes, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet." So in Star Wars, it's an impersonal force. Prophecies happen, but they're kind of fatalistic. It's just destiny. It just happens. Can you see that in the New Testament, it's totally different? It's a personal God with a personal plan for my life. And again, I want to say to you, don't take my word for it. Think about it. That is so much better. Actually, when I was at school, all my teachers told me, "John, follow your dreams." So I did. I went back to bed. And actually, if you think about it, I don't want to follow my dreams. My dreams are scary. I really, really, really hope that my destiny is not going to involve me sitting in the Great Hall doing a calculus exam that I've not revised for with no clothes on. That's a scary dream. dream. I don't want my dreams to come about. If in life it was just fatalism, it was just destiny like that, I would find that a terrible place to live. I find the Christian gospel really reassuring. There is a personal God with a personal plan for my life. Now, that doesn't mean that life is always easy. As we've heard, we are failures, we make mistakes. Sometimes it's our fault, sometimes it's other people's fault. But if I trust in a personal God with a personal plan, that gives me great reassurance and enables me to cope with life. But again, don't take my word for it. You investigate it for yourself. But all of that is summed up in verse 23. Personal sin, personal plan. Because the New Testament gospel is about a personal God. Verse 23. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. That actually, again, God is not some impersonal force that you can use either to your good or evil, like in Star Wars. God is a personal God who wants a personal relationship with each of us. And if you think about it, that expression, God with us, that is both, that's both a happy thing, but also a little bit scary, isn't it? It's happy in the sense, I think, wow, the almighty creator of the whole universe wants a relationship with me. But it's also a little bit scary too, isn't it? Because I think, well, wow, if he really is the creator of the universe, and I've lived my life rejecting him, I'd want to put that right, wouldn't I, before I meet him, before I have a relationship with him? So it's sort of happy and scary. All those three things together show us how Matthew's gospel, the New Testament gospel, is different from Star Wars. Star Wars is great, there's lots of things that are the same, but there are some differences. So putting that all together, our challenge this Christmas, whether you see the film or not, is that, who do we believe, Jesus or George Lucas? Now, you might be sitting there thinking, oh, well, that's a bit ridiculous, George Lucas, he's just a film writer, nobody. You don't believe in George Lucas like you believe in Jesus. Really? Since 2001, in our census in this country, Jedi Knight is a recognised religion. And I'll show you how influential it is. So this is 2011 statistics. 2011 statistics. 176,632 people class themselves as Jedi Knights. That's down from 390,000 in 2001. And to put that statistic in perspective, so that's 176,000 Jedi Knights as their religion in this country. Put that in perspective. In the 2011 census, 263,000 people said they were Jewish, and 248,000 people said they were Buddhist. So it's about the same, roughly, slightly down, but roughly, Jedi religion is about the same as Judaism and Buddhism in this country. Now, that's just a statistic, but it does illustrate the way that not just Star Wars, but social media, all the things we're watching, shapes our lives. And so this Christmas, there is a decision made. Are we going to really follow Jesus and the gospel that Matthew has told us about? Or do we think George Lucas describes the real way? Now, it's your decision. There's no pressure. I'm going to pray toward just at the end of the service. And if you want to decide to follow Jesus, not George Lucas, you'll have a chance to do that. But just to give you some time to sort of reflect about that, the rest of the service is going to carry on, and I'll pick that up later. But that's just a question you would think about when we sing this next song, for example. Who do you believe, Jesus or George Lucas? Well, think about that more, but now we're going to sing a song. It's a modern carol. We've sung it a few times. From the squalor of a borrowed stable. If you want to stand, let's sing it together.